This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
People are looking towards issues like the economy, issue of coronavirus, issue of insurgency that has been bedeviling this country for a while.
That's journalist Mahmoud Lalo reporting on Sunday's elections in Niger. Details coming up. Also, violence is threatening Central Africa's presidential and legislative election on Sunday. And medical experts in South Africa urge fellow citizens to comply with pandemic restrictions. All these and more ahead on African News Tonight. But first, we start with our top story. The bodies of 20 migrants from sub-Saharan Africa were retrieved from the waters of Tunisia after their boat capsized. A spokesman for the Tunisian Defense Ministry said five other migrants who were on board were rescued. Tunisia is just a few hundred kilometers from mainland Europe and has long been a launchpad for illegal migration to the continent. Illegal crossings from Tunisia to Europe jumped by more than 150% from January to April, compared with the same period last year, according to the UN Refugee Agency. Most of the African migrants are fleeing economic hardship and crisis at home. Niger is set for presidential and legislative elections on December 27th, which could bring the country's first democratic transition of power since independence in 1960. The country faces insecurity, corruption, and poverty, among other challenges. For more, VOA's Chinedu Ofor spoke with VOA House of Service reporter Mahmoud Lalo, who is in Niamey.
From what I've observed, I've seen a lot of preparation on every side of the parties that are going to contest in this election. Niamey is wearing a new look. You'll see billboards of presidential candidates all around the city of Niamey, where the presidential candidates posted their big pictures overlooking the entire city. A lot of people, even though they are going about doing their businesses, but right at the back of their mind, you know that on the 27th of December, they're going to go to the polls to elect a new leader. They are ready for this election.
What is at stake in this election?
There are major issues in the minds of voters. What is at stake right now is that people are looking towards issues like the economy, issue of coronavirus, issue of insurgency that has been bedeviling this country for a very long time. I'm sure you know that Niger has a border with Nigeria around Tillaberi and Difa, where Boko Haram insurgents is to overlap into Niger to launch attacks. A lot of the candidates are really out telling their voters that they can take care of these issues regarding economy, insurgency, issue of drought, and what have you. You know, there are also issues of people moving out of Niger to go to places like Algeria, Europe, and other neighboring countries around the continent to look for a greener pasture. These are all issues that are coming up that the candidates are using as a tool to tell their voters that we are going to take care of these issues.
Any security challenges heading up to this election?
So far, even though I've tried to talk to the security officials here, but to no avail, there's little or no fear of any security challenging coming up in this election. Because from the campaigns that I've been following from all the candidates, I heard them talking about we want a peaceful election. Nobody should go violent. Nobody should raise his hand against his fellow Nigerian citizen. Let's go to the polls, cast our vote, and go back home and wait for the results. No any threat of security. But as far as areas where Tillaberi and Difa are, which borders Nigeria, there is this little fear of a probable attack from Boko Haram insurgents, because what they used to do is they will come into Niger, launch an attack, and then quickly go back into Nigeria, into the bushes. That's what is actually happening, even though officials are still saying that elections are going to take place in those areas, and that they've taken all the necessary measures that they need to take to ensure that the election is hedge-free.
Any complaints from especially the opposition, or is everyone having a level playing field when it comes to this election?
Well, there's one complaint that's coming from the opposition side, which is on the 13th of December, there was local government elections, which the result was announced this morning. And all the entire seats were at stake, were taken by the ruling PNDS party. So what the opposition are saying is that there is massive fraud in the election, which they are contesting because they are exercising this fear of the fact that probably that's what's going to repeat itself in the general election. Therefore, they are calling on the authorities to really look into this issue so that there will be no rigging and what have you regarding the general election that is coming up on December 27 this year.
That was Mahmoud Lalo, a reporter in Niger for VOA's House of Service. He was speaking with my colleague Chinedu Ofor. Violence is threatening Central Africa's presidential and legislative elections on Sunday. Press reports indicate there is a growing insecurity to the point where some opposition candidates have pulled out of the race. French President Emmanuel Macron sent warplanes yesterday to fly over the country as panic is gripping the streets of the capital, Bangui. Businesses have closed and people are sheltering in their homes ahead of Sunday's election. Russia and Rwanda have sent forces to help with security after rebel groups launched attacks several days ago. The United Nations force in the Central African Republic have said the fighting has been halted. President Faustin Archange Touadéra and his party say the vote will go ahead. His government says that former President François Bozizé was behind the rebel attacks and accuses him of leading a coup effort. Bozizé and his supporters have denied that allegation. There are more than 1,500 candidates for 140 seats in the National Assembly. Central African Republic, rich in diamonds, timber and gold, has been racked by five coups d'etats and numerous rebellions since independence from France in 1960. The Ethiopian Human Rights Commission says gunmen killed more than 100 people in an ethnic violence yesterday in the Benishangul-Gumuz region in the country's west. The attack in Matakil zone occurred a day after Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed visited the region and urged an end to such ethnic violence. Ethnic tensions are a major challenge to his government as he tries to promote national unity among Ethiopia's more than 80 ethnic groups. Abiy today said he had deployed forces to the region. The French news agency AFP reports that the federal troops have arrested several local officials and have killed about 40 suspected attackers. Ethiopia last month launched a military offensive in the Tigray region after what it said were attacks by the Tigray People's Liberation Front on federal military facilities. At present, news reports say there does not appear to be a link between the attack in Benishangul-Gumuz and the fighting in Tigray. Infections and deaths from COVID-19 continue to surge in South Africa, with the total number of cases recorded since the beginning of the pandemic fast approaching 1 million. The government has confirmed almost 26,000 deaths, but scientists say this figure is almost certainly higher. They say COVID-19's second wave in South Africa is being driven by what local scientists are calling a perfect storm. Darren Taylor has more.
South African medical scientist Barry Shube is one of the world's foremost virologists. He says COVID-19's second wave has hit the country much earlier than anticipated.
So it has taken us by surprise. We do need to look at ancillary medical facilities other than the hospital, because the hospitals are really filling up, particularly all the way on the seaboard from KZN all the way to Cape Town. Hospitals are at capacity.
The government set up a few field hospitals around the country. Shube says they must be staffed and used as soon as possible, especially because the new COVID-19 variant recently found in South Africa is spreading fast.
We've got the 501 variant with a few more mutations. That's just a chance event. We were a little bit unlucky, nothing to do really with anything intrinsic in our population. That's more transmissible because that particular mutation facilitates the virus's ability to infect cells, to infect our respiratory cells.
The professor says COVID-19's resurgence in the country is being fueled by a dangerous mix of a new, more infectious variant and irresponsibility during the festive season.
We really rely at this stage on human behavior to really control the epidemic. That's really what the only weapon that we got at the moment.
Keith Klute is a health department official in the Western Cape. It's one of the worst affected provinces.
So we really have this impassioned plea for every single person. Keep in our bubble. The only way that we can control what happens is control what happens to us. We have choices. We don't have to go to gatherings. We don't have to go to parties. We can keep ourselves safe, but therefore we're safeguarding others.
But Klute says it seems as if as soon as the summer holiday season kicked off just more than a week ago, people forgot all about the pandemic and stopped wearing masks and social distancing.
People felt we were over this, it's not so serious. None of us factored in that we would have a mutation, a variant of this virus, that had three mutations, which is very unusual, that now spreads much faster than the first variant. So in a sense, this is not the same COVID that we dealt with in the first wave.
Shub expects more variants of COVID-19 in South Africa and elsewhere in the near future, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Fortunately, the kind of natural history with most viruses is that they evolve from mutations to become more transmissible, and generally with most viruses, they tend to become less virulent.
Klute has a message for South Africans who are ignoring measures to prevent the spread of coronavirus, especially those attending big parties.
Think of the people that have lost loved ones. Think of the people that are about to lose loved ones. One of our organized labor colleagues has lost 7 close family members. We have in the Western Cape, more than 800 healthcare workers are infected. 58 have been admitted in the last 14 days. 8 of them have died.
The government expects the rollout of a COVID vaccine to begin in mid-January at the earliest, but it'll initially only be for 10% of South Africa's population of 60 million and made available first to vulnerable groups such as healthcare workers and the elderly. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Amid a surge in COVID-19 cases, Botswana has imposed a 9-hour nighttime curfew over the festive season. No movement will be allowed between 7 p.m. and 4 a.m. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
In a televised public address Wednesday, Botswana President Mokgweetsi Masisi said the move was meant to protect the nation in view of rising COVID-19 cases.
I wish to inform you that government has taken a decision to impose a curfew from 7 p.m. to 4 a.m. from the 24th December 2020 to the 3rd of January 2021 in order to protect this nation from the impending catastrophe. This means there shall be no movement of people between 7 p.m. and 4 a.m. from the 24th December 2020 to the 3rd January 2021.
Masisi said he was concerned with non-compliance with COVID-19 protocols and warned of a further rise in cases amid fears over a new strain of the virus. The variant was found in Botswana's neighbor, South Africa, which is battling a second wave of COVID-19 and has imposed its own new pandemic restrictions.
I want to caution you that new and more aggressive variants of COVID-19 have been detected across the globe, including in our region, which requires us to be more vigilant.
Despite the new restrictions, borders with neighbors, including South Africa, remain open. Habrone resident Pagoli said he welcomed the decision to impose a curfew, but is concerned about its impact on the already ailing economy.
We're seeing some recovery and some businesses were looking to capitalize over the busy festive season. However, we cannot mourn as the decision has been taken to protect our lives. It is going to be a bleak Christmas.
Since March, Botswana has recorded 11,982 COVID-19 cases, with 797 still active, while 38 people lost their lives. The country is recording an average of 170 new cases daily. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Havoroni, Botswana.
Nigerians are ignoring a government advisory against travel between cities and holding large gatherings as the country confronts a second wave of the coronavirus pandemic. The government has ruled out a second lockdown, sparking alarm within the health community of further spread of the virus to rural areas. For more, my colleague Chinedu Ofor spoke with Dr. Anthony Ibe, Assistant Professor of Medicine at Howard University and Georgetown School of Medicine in Washington, D.C.
The prospect or the end result is frightening because whenever there's large gathering, there is a high likelihood of spread. Then nobody can guarantee how each individual person who is exposed to the virus will handle the virus. Yes, there's a significant percentage of people survive it, but there's a significant percentage also, significant minority that have very, very bad outcome, including death. Like you already know, in the United States, more than 300,000 people are already dead. And the problem we have in developing areas of the world is that not all deaths are registered or counted, and some of them occur in villages. And then with the maybe possible stigma attached to somebody dying from COVID, the relatives may not want to report it. So these deaths are going to be undercounted. And that might give us a false sense of, you know, protection that, oh, is not common in Nigeria or in any of these African countries.
Does Nigeria have the capacity to deal with what people are now calling a possible super spreader?
Given our history, we do have the capacity, considering that we have in the past controlled the spread of Ebola, from time to have flare-ups of Lassa fever and all that. And the public health officials, we must give them kudos for what they have done in the past and continue to do. Unfortunately, this pandemic is not ending, and we're hearing of new variants of the virus. So we must continue to double our efforts. And part of it is really, really engaging the people. And yes, you're right that it could become a super spreader event in Nigeria if people stay gathered together in churches like nothing has happened, singing. Because when you're singing in an enclosed space, you're likely to be generating a lot more virus into the space, and other people are breathing to the same space. So that is, to my mind, I feel a little frightened about that. I think we should do all we can to advise people that this is not a good course of action. And maybe as the Christmas church ceremonies come, are likely to be with us shortly, these events can be held outside, not inside enclosures. And in some cases, there may be television screens to put people apart so they can see the service, the church services occurring from a center, but from a distance, and also decrease their risk of exposure.
Are there any medical reasons why the Nigerian government has asked junior workers to stay home while the senior workers would continue to work in the office, but leaving open schools, restaurants, and other areas of the economy, including opening the borders?
Yeah, there should be some restriction at the border. If you're going to keep the border open, there must be some way of screening people. No longer just temperatures are no use. So either we say we must have some kind of COVID testing at the border with rapid results. Sometimes now people are now developing all these rapid tests. So if that is happening at the border, kudos. But if it's not happening and you just let people in and out, that is a recipe for disaster. I'm hoping and praying that that is accompanied by some testing.
That's Dr. Anthony Ibe, Assistant Professor of Medical at Howard University and Georgetown School of Medicine. He spoke with VOA's Chinedu Ofor from Washington, D.C. The Chivu chess queens may not be a familiar name in rural Zimbabwe, yet in the small town of Chivu, a high school chess team has played their way into the title of chess queens. Reporter Kuza Zenawashi has more from Harare.
Godlos Dembure is a teacher at Mudavanu Primary School in Chivu. He is also the coach of the old girls chess team.
It is a team of girls only, that's why it is called the Chief Queens. And this consists of different girls from the rural areas which have got poor backgrounds but are talented in the game of chess. It is the team which was developed from nothing when we had no chess boards and those things to use to train chess.
He highlights some of the team's successes that has earned them the title Chivu Queens.
It is the team of rural girls who are just doing very well in the chess fraternity and are currently to play in the World Cup qualifiers. It is from 14 to December to 18th of December this year. They are dominating in Zimbabwe and even at the African stage.
Dembure says, for the girls, chess provides a gateway out of poverty. In 2019, they participated in a continental tournament in Africa and came fourth. For many of these girls, the build-up was quite an experience. Natasha Choko is the team captain. She says, I'm the captain of Chivu Queens. I started playing when I was in grade 3. Last year, we got the opportunity to go and contest in Namibia. We were scared. Even getting on the plane was a new experience to us. Dembure says, even elevators were new to the girls when they went to Namibia. Some of their success has been made possible through crowdfunding, which has enabled their travel. He adds, however, the team members will be looking into finding income-generating projects to minimize the need to turn to crowdfunding when they need to do something. He adds that their success has rubbed off onto others in the rural community, and he says, while early marriages are prevalent in rural communities like Chivu, chess has kept some of the girls busy enough to continue their education. For VOA, this is Kudza Ezinawashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the internet.